extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time, Club and Country, driven by Continental Tire from the AT&T 5G Virtual Studios. I'm Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer, Kaylin Carr, David Goss, Cesar Hernandez, joining us here on a very special show for three of us. Cesar, and thanks for being along, man. I appreciate
it. It's still a special show. It's the friends you make along the way that's really important.
Exactly. It's relationships, you know, forged in the fires of three losses in 1 year for the first time for a certain rival since 1937. Just giving you the facts. U.S. 2-0 in Ohio. Columbus wasn't doing it. Cincinnati did it. TQL Stadium needed some joy.
Well, the
U.S. fans, TQL Stadium gave us some joy. Before we glow, before we do our thing, Cesar, welcome, man. If I was you, I might have walked away. I might have just said, hey, you guys do this.
Internet's not working.
Exactly.
I try to be an unbiased reporter with much of the work that I do. The only thing that I can say that I am biased towards is the Mexican national team. But I will say the facts, because I am a reporter nonetheless. The facts are that Mexico are equal to the U.S. So congratulations to the U.S. to not surpassing Mexico, but actually being equal on points.
A goal differential is a tiebreaker, and we are not equal on goal differential. And head to head is the third tiebreaker after that one. Not even there. 2-0. Christian Pulisic in the second.
Wait, what was the score?
2-0. 2-0. See, we got to make sure you got to go both directions. Make sure everybody understands completely and utterly what happened here tonight. Christian Pulisic comes off the bench. Hits him with a t-shirt that we're going to discuss here in a little bit, because Greg Berhalter was saying before this match that Mexico was not giving the U.S. enough respect. Ochoa said, hey, you're looking in the mirror, trying to see if you can measure up to Mexico. Well, Pulisic was the man in the mirror on this night, and then put the icing on the cake from Weston McKennie, who went full Harry Potter. It was was it a dominant performance, Dave? Kaylin, what was this from the U.S.? It was a different kind of performance, I think, from the very first whistle. You could just feel a different energy, a different sort of directness, a different attitude from the U.S. players, I thought. And then the performance through 90 minutes reflected it outside a couple chances in the first half for Altri.
I thought it was, I thought Mexico in the first half had the better of the match. They had clearly the better of the chances for sure. But the game was pretty open end to end. And yeah, I think when you look at, the performances earlier in the summer, you can see here there's, some big saves from Stefan, I thought also went a long way. And you have to give Greg a lot of credit for making that call. Big time performance from Stefan, as we'll go through kind of the list of guys that had great days. But I think just for this team overall, just kind of zooming out a little bit, there was the, Nations League, which felt like, wow, like that, this team really proved a lot to themselves. But, and then even the Gold Cup final, where it was maybe not even the first choice U.S. men's national team, but psychologically, the team started to believe in itself. And whether Mexico wants to admit it or not, or Tata Martino wants to admit it or not, I think those type of psychological sort of victories for a young U.S. team took them a long way. But the question was, hey, now this one counts. World Cup qualifying, this is a different beast. It's not the same as the Nations League. It's not the Gold Cup. This is the one where it really matters. And when they sized up against each other tonight, we saw, yes, Mexico had the better of the chances, but that's what separates, teams at this stage of qualifying, is who's going to finish their chances. And you got to give Christian for coming in. I think it was his first touch of the match potentially. And then Weston, who maybe didn't even have necessarily his best day throughout the match, made just a timely third man run through the heart of the midfield. Nice little combination play there, and then does the business to make it 2-0. So big time performance from the U.S. tonight, and you'd have to say the biggest win of the Berhalter era.
Dave, do you have a word? We did this a lot earlier this year after these games. Do you have one word that can kind of sum this up for you, or is it bigger than that?
Yeah, it's bigger than that. I mean, my one word would be Dos Aceros. Does that count as one word? Can we
make mash it all together? Just don't.
That is tres palabras.
just don't breathe between. It's a hashtag. That counts. One word.
I think the one word, it would be something like project or progression, right? 2018, this was unimaginable. The U.S. didn't qualify for the World Cup. Mexico went and beat Germany in the opening group stage of the World Cup. They were two programs that were on different planets. And the U.S. started this project of moving the national team forward. And in this region for the U.S., has been for the last 40 years, the benchmark is Mexico. That's where you can judge yourself. And that's where the U.S. fought to get to for 25 years and then relinquished and now is fighting to get back to. And Memo Ochoa said it for all of us this week, and Christian Pulisic, and then Weston McKennie said it back to him.
He wasn't wrong. Like, really wasn't wrong.
And I actually thought I like that metaphor. It's better than all the Weeby metaphors we deal with on this show. So maybe you should call up Memo's people.
I have to laugh.
It's quite poetic, actually.
It is quite poetic.
Once Ochoa retires 40 years from now, you know, because Waddell's going to retire like 30 years from now, apparently. Like, yeah, you can have Ochoa writing up some of this stuff. Yeah.
But yeah, so I just think, and to Kalen's point, the Nations League victory was huge to show that these young players are ready to be on a field with that team. But they didn't dominate that game. They gave up a bunch of chances. There was huge mistakes, all these things. And then the Gold Cup final was a different group, but I think you saw another step in terms of progression, and I think you saw another one tonight. This wasn't the U.S. is going to pass Mexico off the field and control every moment of the game and dominate that. Maybe will be possible one day, but it also wasn't that game that happened in Denver a few months ago. So I think that's the first word that comes to mind. And then progression, because the U.S. is probably going to qualify for a World Cup. And that used to be somewhat standard, but it was not a guarantee this cycle and didn't happen last cycle. And for the progression of this sport in this country, for this to happen tonight in that stadium, in that moment, and then move forward, I think that's all huge.
Yeah. I think a rival, to kind of sum up what you're going for, because I completely agree with you about the previous two matchups. To me, this one's a rival. We did it on the stage that mattered most. Now, the one thing I would caution is that this is not a full-strength Mexico, Cesar. This is not – we didn't come in here and beat the best backline and tear apart a backline with chemistry and personnel.
But Gio Reyna and Christian Pulisic, Gio Reyna's not on the roster, and Christian Pulisic's not fit.
I mean, Pulisic was on the pitch, but nonetheless, I agree. But at the same time, I think there are no excuses for this Mexico side. I think that we saw those opportunities the first half for Tecatito, for Chucky, for Jimenez, and they didn't capitalize on them, and they really should have. It wasn't as if that was Antuna up there. It wasn't if it was Orbelin up there. That was Mexico's best front three, like up there in the attack. And they didn't capitalize on those opportunities that they had in the first half. And I think what stands out to me is that I would say, and I tweet out about it, it's kind of like a little tongue in cheek what I was saying in the first half, but I said something along the lines of just in the first half, it looked like USA was playing against Mexico the way that Mexico was playing against the US in the Nations League and Gold Cup final. And what I mean by that, it looked like Mexico were the better team in those games, and they just couldn't find the back net, or they really weren't taking advantage of those, like that possession that they had. And I think it was almost like on the flip side over here, where I thought
like
the U.S. was playing
like a mirror, mate.
There you go. I thought the U.S. was doing much better in the first half, and they didn't have that first goal there. But nonetheless, I was really impressed second half by what the U.S. had done. And I was really disappointed in the second half by Tata. I'm not some sort of like Mexican media member who's been criticizing Tata as soon as he stepped in, because that's kind of, standard when it comes to Mexican media. But I was actually, for the first time, this has actually been the most disappointed I have been by Tata. I thought that his substitutions were a little bit too late. I thought he would have made some subs at halftime. And yeah, I think it was by far his most disappointing performance. But at the same time, you got to give credit to the U.S. because, like I said, I thought Mexico were the better side in the Nations League, in the Gold Cup. I thought, to be honest, obviously I'm biased, I thought Mexico were worthy of getting the win in those two games. But in this match, I can't argue against the U.S. win. They were the better side, and especially in the second half. I thought they were 100% worthy of getting that. I'm not going to say Dos Acero, but 2-0 win. Yeah.
2-0, yeah. 18 shots to 8 for the U.S. on this day. Now it's 5-4 on goal. But possession, Mexico's possession win the possession numbers, but you really felt like the U.S. were able to sort of control the game in ways that we haven't seen before. It wasn't all just kind of smash, bang, grab. We're going to go press. We're going to beat you physically. Like, yeah. The U.S. had opportunities, especially in the first, and we're just sloppy on the ball in key areas or didn't have the final pass. Now, like, this is all within the context of a greater region here. The U.S. and Mexico are at the top. They are the giants of CONCACAF, but so much more went on tonight, and we'll get to that as well. We'll have to talk Canada. They got a 1-0 win in Edmonton against Costa Rica. If Keylor Navas is in goal for the Ticos, it's probably 0-0, but he wasn't. Jonathan David taking advantage of a goalkeeper flub. 1-0 there. Drama elsewhere, Panama 3-2 winners, and that's big. We'll talk about that in a second because they keep pace with the top three here on 11 points. They came back from 2-0 down, scored three goals in like 9 minutes from the late 70th into the 80th minutes and win 3-2 in Honduras. Honduras looked like they're basically out of this thing. El Salvador, Jamaica 1-1. El Salvador come back. Alex Roldan with the goal to bring them back for that draw after Antonio. Was it his debut? It was his World Cup qualifying debut, Dave?
No, I think he's played a game, right? Yeah,
he played the home Panama game in the first round of qualifying that they lost 3-1 or 3-0.
Either way, a solo goal that you thought was going to be massive for the Jamaicans ends up being a point for them. And then, of course, the U.S. 2-0, Dos Acero over Mexico. I got to give it to Dos Acero, man. U.S. 14 points top of the octagon right now on goal differential. Mexico right behind them. Canada on 13. Panama on 11, and then there's a big gap. And that gap really matters, of course, because the top three get into the World Cup. The fourth goes into a playoff. Costa Rica, Jamaica, El Salvador all on 6, 5 points back of Panama, 7 points back of Canada, 8 back of the U.S. and Mexico after 7 games. And we're officially on the other side. There are fewer games left than there are that you've played. So the opportunities to claw back, to get yourself conditioned, to find a way to go to Qatar, those are going to be few and far between. And then Honduras down at the bottom, I think we can safely say that their World Cup qualification campaign is basically over on 3 points. Let's dig through this thing, and let's start with the man of the match. Who's your man of the match, Kalen? You sort of teased it there. You were talking Zach Steffen. Tim Weah has got to be in that. I mean, Pulisic off the bench making a big contribution. You could probably pick, you know, Walker Zimmerman, I think, had a really, really good game. At center back, Miles Robinson might have been in that running until he got the red card.
Are you asking us, or are you just going to name every player?
I guess I'm giving options here. It's a classic Weeby list, Dave.
Yeah. Just it's hard to do a list when there's a finite amount of players. I would say Timothy Weah. I said in the first half when we came on to do our meeting at halftime, I thought in the first half he was the only player who would, you know, drop a shoulder and go in the other direction. Maybe Yunus Musa. He beat a couple players 1v1. He had one, I think, huge mistake where he took a long shot when he had Anthony Robinson on his own side of the field going down the left side. Besides that, I think he was the most dangerous player for the U.S. He won a lot of tackles. He was good in the air because when the U.S. gets pressed, often they chip that ball to the second level, and it's Pepe or Weah that goes up and gets it when it comes off Zimmerman's foot or Zach Steffen. And he was good in those moments as well. And then, of course, he creates the goal. Creating the goal was huge for him. I think it's more to do with Pulisic in that Weah created moments like that throughout the game, and there was no one on the other end to react to it. But he still gets separation, gets towards the end line, drives that ball at a good height that Pulisic can put it away. So to me, Timothy Weah rose to the occasion today like I thought he would in Panama in the last cycle, and showed that he's in that conversation as a first option player no matter who's healthy.
And he's looked really good when he's played with other players that are sort of the first choice team.
Yeah.
You mentioned when Christian came on, but, you know, just the more you've seen him, when even in his appearances off the bench, when he's been involved with the first team, he just brings something a little bit different. And I thought even from the beginning of the match, he had the right level of energy. You know, the front three with Aaronson and Pepe and him were able to press. They weren't able to create sort of clear-cut opportunities, but the energy level was great. He, you know, I thought Weah was able to tuck inside at times. He sort of understood when to come inside into those pockets and help sort of keep possession and pick off a ball, maybe dropped off of Pepe and connect to him, as well as the one where you see on the run, which created the goal, where he was able to kind of sort of drift wide and open up that space and go on and one and get a good service in the box. I thought he was huge. You know, the other person to mention would be Walker Zimmerman,
who I just thought,
you know, with the national team, he's just the type of guy too, even just from a personality standpoint, that was going to be up for a US-Mexico game. And I just thought, you know, winning big tackles, those long balls where when you do press, you have to be able to have that safety valve. We've seen Miles Robinson have games like that in the past. You know, and this time he actually gets caught out a couple times, making a little bit over-aggressive plays, which ends up getting sent off near the very end of the game, which they were trying to get Chris Richards onto the pitch. He was on the sidelines because, you know, Berhalter obviously knew he was on a yellow and trying to get him off. And it just happened right just before that. But I would say Walker Zimmerman really was that guy today that was able to put out those fires when the U.S. did get pressed a little bit higher than they needed to, and winning everything in the air. You know, he's always going to do that.
From a Mexico perspective, I definitely respect what Zimmerman was doing out there, but also Weah. Yeah. I know, like, in the first half, some of the stuff he did, like, felt a little inaccurate or wasn't, like, exactly on point, but he was creating stuff. And, like, as someone who was focusing more on the Mexico side, I felt like he was a more dangerous player, like, really trying stuff out, really creating those opportunities. So I feel like if I had to give someone the man of the match, I would definitely give it to Weah. Like, I don't know, like, he definitely felt like the most threatening player out there, especially in the first half. Then you saw what he did in the second half, too.
And I gotta say that Raul Jimenez and Walker Zimmerman aerial battles. I mean, Tyler Adams is like paying the price for the level of physicality that those brought for the entirety of the game.
Yeah.
Like those two guys, it was just like just throwing bodies up in the air. And there were a couple times where I thought Zimmerman, who you don't often see, sort of get like stuck a little bit and be physically off balance or physically dominated a little bit. Kind of look around and be like, ah, God, this guy's hard to deal with. But yeah, you said it, Kaelin, in behind all of that. I personally would go with Zimmerman in this game because I just think that without that, the U.S. are down. Without that sort of safety blanket and that like awareness, I'm not sure we get the shutout in this one. And I think the first goal changed everything.
I the one thing I would just say, Miles Robinson struggled in this game, but not just in the moments Kaelin talked about. All of the chances for Mexico came when Zimmerman got pulled out to challenge Jimenez, and it was Tecatito and it was Chucky, and we talked about it in the pregame on Twitter Spaces. The communication and the quarterbacking from Miles Robinson wasn't there, and so especially on the Tecatito chance where Miles comes all the way across the field where there is no danger, and then Anthony Robinson has to try and get inside of Tecatito on that far post, which it's just. It's frustrating because you know we knew it was coming. Like, you know they worked on it, and Miles Robinson just seemed to be very unaware or uncomfortable with dealing with those situations. So it's a tough one. It's tough to see him get a red card, too, because he's been one of the first names, I think, on the team sheet in terms of they haven't rotated him. Like, he's the center back, and then who's going to start next to him? So it'll be interesting to see how it goes down in Jamaica.
What's next for L3? Cesar, as they go to Canada, and we'll talk more about that here in a little bit, but like I see right now at the dais Tata Martino after this match, and your good friend Wisco Vasquez is out tweeting out some quotes here. So, quote, "We lost our first game of these qualifying matches and it was against a strong rival. The players are upset and understandably so, not mentioning Nations League and Gold Cup." Probably a smart move there by Tata. He says in this first half they're the one of the opportunities, and I agree with that. Like, this game could be completely different. You know, in a different world where Chucky scores, or more accurately, probably Tecatito scores, because that was the big opportunity, it's different. But he said once the U.S. got the first goal, we calmly maintained control. And I think that's also a difference for the U.S., of to be in that lead spot, especially this team, and just sort of be like, all right, just end it. Like, it's over. We feel confident that we're going to be the ones that sort of control this game for the rest of the way, because we've been there before.
Yeah, I mean, I think obviously it's not the end of the world, although we'll be end of the world when it comes to Mexican sports papers tomorrow morning. That'll be interesting to check that out.
Gotta sell papers, man.
You gotta. So looking at the second game, I think there's gonna be more defensive solidity because Araujo will be available for the second game. I expect Araujo and Johan Vasquez to be available for that central defensive partnership there. Although you could make the argument that also that is, will be a little bit of experiment. And the same way that you could say that also, you know, Vasquez and Gata were a little bit of an experiment tonight. I do think that Araujo brings a lot more experience. So I think they'll be fine right there. But nonetheless, I mean, it feels like as opposed to them thinking that you can get away with a draw in the next game or getting away with some sort of like tightly, like, you know, like tense, like fought, like a away result right here. They got to push for a win here. I think that my expectation, and I feel like my expectation was actually kind of, I don't know, conservative as opposed to a lot of people in the Mexican soccer media. I was pushing for 4 points. A lot of people were saying, no, it has to be 6 points, has to be 6 points, has to be 6 points. And I thought that was a little irrational, but after this loss to the US, I mean, Tata has to push for a win here against Canada and what will be 10 degrees in Edmonton. And what we were in the group chat earlier this week, like you guys saying that, well, like Wolverhampton, it's or Wolves or whatever, like they only have like about, it's a balmy 4 degrees in November or something.
The temperature to me isn't even the issue. Like we all saw that pitch.
Yeah.
Like that field in Edmonton,
it's going to be cold.
You can't call it a cow patch.
It's going to be cold, yeah.
Also, I mean, there's going to be 50,000 Canadian fans screaming.
Jacked up. Like,
the atmosphere today in Canada was phenomenal. The field is garbage. So that is an issue. I actually thought it was an issue against Canada today.
Are you putting out that the field is really genuinely garbage? Is that
no? It's awful. Like I don't know if you saw any of that game. Like you
no,
would be.
No, I did not.
You would not. Yeah. You would step on that as a like a men's league player or a co-ed player, okay, or like whatever. Like you ate and be like, I don't know if we should play on this.
but nonetheless, 3 points are now a necessity here for Tata. You guys were asking me just like, well, if Tata like loses this game and the next game, will his job be on the line? I'd be like, no, he'll be on the hot seat. Like he's not going to get fired. But if after this result against the US, I feel like it's now once again, just like it's 100% like a need for him to get 3 points here. Cause if he doesn't, then that, I'm not gonna say the beginning of the end. I don't want to be like melodramatic here, but it potentially could be.
Panama hosts El Salvador. Just to throw it out, just real quick. Panama hosts El Salvador on Tuesday. The U.S. go to Jamaica. Mexico, of course, go to Canada. If you're looking at these standings, there would be an opportunity, potentially, and I don't think goal differential would have to go crazy here a little bit, for Panama to tie and perhaps pass on tiebreaker Mexico, if results go a certain way.
Wow.
If Panama wins at home, if Mexico loses on the road, Mexico could conceivably drop into fourth in the octagon standings. And by the way, Panama, yeah, I said conceivably, it's possible.
I mean, it's also conceivable that the U.S. will drop down too. Mexico will back up and people will still say that U.S. are kings of CONCACAF. I don't know.
I think if we're being real and what we've seen, we're talking about three teams that have probably done enough to get into a World Cup at minimum.
Yes, yeah, I agree.
Tata convo to me is about perception. What is it that fans expect? What is it the Federation expects of their team and of their coach? The one thing that's interesting to me about this game is, and Taylor mentioned it a couple times on the broadcast for ESPN too, but Mexico and the U.S. have both been teams that have worn sides down in World Cup qualifying. They have both scored a ton of goals late. Yeah. Mexico did in the opening game against Jamaica. They've done it against Honduras as well. They've done it throughout qualifying. And the U.S. as well is a team that I would like to see them come out more aggressive. I would like to see them press harder. But over the course of games and the amount that of the ball that they have and the way they are direct at times, something breaks eventually. And so this game was both those teams going up against each other, and the U.S. was the one that was able to continue to improve as the game went along and actually get better as the game went along, where on the flip side, Mexico, I think, got less dangerous from the first half to the second half. And so it's interesting to see two groups that have done the same thing effectively go up against each other. And that's where I think you look at the age for the U.S. And the environment. Like, you're the home team. It's you gain confidence as you're in this moment, as you're in this environment, and you gain energy. Where on the flip side, I think you see Zach Steffen save that chance Tecatito misses the other chance, and it felt like it took some of the wind out of Mexico's sails. So that was it. That was huge for the U.S., and I think it was huge for the U.S. to show that they could kind of dictate that style of game against every team in the region.
No, you got to give them credit for that too. And I think as a Mexico fan, you 100% have to give them credit for that and what they did in that match. And especially since I thought things could potentially change in the second half. And once again, I will say that, like, I thought, like I said, I'm not someone who traditionally, like, you know, criticizes Tata, but I think that Tata Martino could have done a better job there in the second half. And that's something that worries me a little bit. I'm not going to say significantly heading into 2022 since, you know, there's just one more qualifier after this and then taking a break for a little bit of time. But yeah, I was a little disappointed by how the way that Tata responded in that second half there.
Halfway through World Cup qualifying, I said that we're on the back end. Well, after this next game, we will be. That'll be the eighth game. There are 14 games in the octagon for all these teams. As we just said, look, these three are in pole position. It's basically going to be up to Panama over the course of the next three or four qualifiers to put themselves in a position going to the final two match days where they have, I believe, Mexico and Honduras in the first one and then the U.S. and Canada in the final match day in the octagon. If they can be in position, striking distance, they'll have their opportunity to take points away from their main rivals and to jump up. Otherwise, I think it's going to be these three teams. Nobody else in the region has exerted themselves. Nobody else in the region has shown that they have the depth, quality, or consistency to challenge the U.S., Mexico, and Canada. It basically comes down to Panama at this point. And for all the, like, you know, hand-wringing that we did have for the U.S. early on, some results that didn't go our way, especially in that first round of games, things have evened out. Things have evened out a little bit for Mexico as well, and things seem to be breaking Canada's way when they need the biggest breaks. Just to like wrap a bow on this game, then we'll look ahead just a little bit. What were the things that you think that Greg can take forward, Kalen? Like, what are the things that you saw in this game and you said, okay, that's either the beginning of something or that's reinforcement that this is the way that we should take going forward? Or can we take anything? Because we still don't have Gio. We didn't have full-strength Pulisic. It wasn't the full team.
Well, I think it probably never will be. I think there's a number of things. One, I think the idea that the U.S. team can, that our front line can really cause problems through our press at times, I think can be, we have the, to be able to do that and then to know that you have a Miles Robinson when he's on, you have Walker Zimmerman, you have Chris Richards, guys that can put out fires to be able to accommodate that. And then you have the guy obviously in front of him who we haven't mentioned yet, but should, Tyler Adams as well, who can kind of put out those fires to play that style of football or soccer or whatever you want to call it, football. And, you know, I think so that's one thing. The other thing is, you know, that midfield three for me, for the U.S., I would be happy if you just sort of write them in ink for the next 5 years, whatever you want, however long you say it. Musa, Adams, McKinney, I love it. Complementary, the way they move, the way they understand each other, and they're just sort of beginning. And then I think we also continue to find out a couple things tonight about players, like we found out in earlier cycles about Brendan Aaronson, that he's ready to step forward into a much bigger role on the team. I think we saw that again with Walker Zimmerman and with Weah as well. But I want to go back to, you know, we sort of hinted at it, but the shirt, because Pulisic and the shirt, you know, is like going all over social media. And I just love that.
That is good. That is good, actually.
I love it so much. And like, it's just the best. And I think it's also revealing of kind of the psyche of, you know, obviously Christian as a player, but also the team. To the point where to wear the white, because you're wearing the white, so you can kind of see through it. And there's some shots of him where you can kind of read through where it says man in the mirror on the close-ups. And that's bold. That is a bold move to do that. And yes, we can go ahead and say before that, you know, that sort of comment was from Ochoa is like really reflective or even poetic, but it's also a dig. And it might be true. But it's intentionally a dig to come at the team the week of the match to say that, you know, we are the mirror, we are the standard, we are who, when you look in the mirror, you want to be like us, you want to see us. And these guys were like, oh, really? Okay, let's talk about that. And we beat you last time, we beat you the time before, and now we're going to do it today. And they came out. Christian comes in. He's not even feeling his best right now. Comes off the bench. First touch. Header. Goal. And you could just see Hector Herrera's face just drop, like on the replay, where he's like, this guy again? Because he was the same guy that stepped up in the Nations League at the penalty spot. And I just love that personality. And same thing with Weston, where in moments, we've seen it in Italy, in the big moments, he seems to find a way. And this team for the US against Mexico, they seem to be on top of that psychological hurdle. And yes, you're always going to say Mexico, you still have to prove something no matter what. It just feels that way, you know, from a cultural standpoint, from a history standpoint, often from a standard, within the match. But I just love that moment happened. And I feel like the shirt thing was actually very revealing.
It's good too, because of what I have always felt about the USA-Mexico rivalry is that it's a necessity for both sides, because outside of USA-Mexico, no offense to other teams, and like, yeah. I believe that the CONCACAF region is growing, and I think that a lot of teams within the CONCACAF region aren't given enough respect. I think that's 100% true. But I think there's something along the lines of kind of like a rising tide kind of lifts all boats, but just kind of like in a CONCACAF sense, I think it benefits Mexico to have a better US, and it benefits the US to have a better Mexico. And right now, this is really good for Mexico. I'm not going to lie, like this, to really want up their game ahead of the World Cup. And what really benefits the US is to have a Mexico that'll be much more competitive as well. So I think that this is really, really good for both parties to kind of, once again, like keep this rivalry going, because no offense to the other teams within the CONCACAF region, so much respect for them. They're all growing, and they actually don't get enough respect for how they're progressing, and especially in recent years. But like, both nations really need each other for this kind of competition, this kind of intense competition that you can't really replicate against other teams leading into the World Cup.
Yeah, this is the closest these two teams get to playing a World Cup style game, yeah. Right? In terms of trying to prepare yourself, in terms of trying to get better. And then, as you said, there's silly residual stuff of like, well, more higher higher FIFA ranking standings. If you beat each other, you get higher in the standings, trying to get better draws in the World Cup, stuff like that. But for sure, there is a level of gaining respect for the region. And if there's a good US and a good Mexico and a good Costa Rica and a good Canada at a World Cup giving strong performances, I think it helps the whole region. Weston McKennie is an experience. I love Weston McKennie. Andrew Wiebe will show you a picture of me alongside a field at GA Cup wearing some insane button-down I still have from 8 years ago watching Weston McKennie play as a youth player. He disappears for large stretches of the game. His passing is sloppy. His first touch is off. And then he scores a goal against Mexico in a World Cup qualifier. Like, he's a flair player as an eight. And it's a unique thing to watch happen. And I think he'll get better because he's a young player and he's still progressing. But he has these incredible moments of brilliance. And then he has these moments where you're like, should he be on the field right now? Is he hurting us or is he helping us? But that's why you leave him on the field the whole time. And almost every time he pops up for a big moment, it is one of the better moments the team has over the course of the game. Whether it's winning a header and a knockdown for a second ball, whether it's the moment he chooses to press and does it well, or when he turns someone on the half turn or breaks a line, whatever it is, it's almost like, you're getting what you're getting from Yunus Musa. You kind of know what you're getting from Tyler Adams. And then when it's good from Weston McKennie, the team's good. And when it's not, sometimes the team struggles. Him popping up for that goal, it's like you kind of knew he was going to score in this game. But 45 minutes in, if you had told me that he was coming off, I would not have complained. Like, that's where he stands. And I love him. It's great. Also, shout out to Luchi Gonzalez, because like five or six of the players who played today, including Jesus and Weston McKennie on that one too, they all came out of his academies in FC Dallas.
So McKennie was doing, was that a little bit of a Gryffindor? Was that?
I think he said he's a Ravenclaw. I think he's said that out there.
Okay.
I got to go back to look, but I think he said that in the past.
He's a Ravenclaw. Interesting.
Feels like a Ravenclaw. Like outwardly you would guess Gryffindor, but inwardly you go Ravenclaw. By the way, sorry if I start cracking up. The YouTube comment section is, it's like the roast of all of us right now. And I just want to say that they're doing an incredible job at creating live content in this very moment. If you're listening right now, you missed some of it. This will be out at the podcast. So we do this live after every single game, Club and Country, to my Connell and Tire. We also push it out as the podcast. So if you want it on demand afterward, if you're at the bar, if you're at the game, in fact, 2KL Stadium looked awesome tonight.
Yeah.
Looked absolutely on fire. Looked like it. Everybody was just completely locked in. It was a sort of environment that, you know, I hope we don't miss, to be honest with you, because we're like talking through this and there's this giddiness that comes depending on the result, of course. But I think some adrenaline, no matter the result, that comes in this rivalry. And I completely agree with you, Cesar, about what these two teams and these two soccer cultures see in each other and that they need each other. But we might not get games like this forever. Yeah.
At least have one more at the Azteca.
But for U.S. soil, this might be the last of these sort of...
That's very true.
You know, knives out World Cup qualifiers, so to speak.
Yeah.
And there's some sadness in that, but I guess some joy depending on the perspective here.
Yeah, we'll at least have one more at the Azteca next year. And then after that, it'll just be...
Gold Cup finals, Gold Cups.
I mean, it's not the same. We all know that. It's just not the same.
It's not the same. All right. Let's look ahead a little bit and let's check out the rest of the region. Before we get to Canada, Dave, and you can choose them if you want. What was the biggest result outside of this match on this World Cup qualifying?
Probably Panama. To be down 2-0 alone is a huge moment. But if Panama loses that game at Honduras, which is completely reasonable, they are sitting tied on points or within 3 points of every team in the region below them. And so to get that win, Honduras is probably eliminated now, where at the 75th minute of the game, they were like back in and reasonably in the conversation on 6 points. And it really knocks Jamaica and El Salvador and Costa Rica down as well. So for Panama to go on the road and get points is huge. And for them to be able to get points against the U.S. at home, but every other team in the region, that's just going to solidify them in fourth place.
Still there, touching distance for Panama. I mean, that's the story of the rest of the qualifying campaign, in my opinion. Like, can Panama keep pace? Can they make it interesting for those automatic World Cup qualifying bids? We shall see for Canada. El Salvador coming up next. Of course, the U.S. has Jamaica. They go to Jamaica. Jamaica 1-1 draw tonight. El Salvador with a late goal from who else? Alex Roldan. And then Canada with a big 1-0 win. Anything else to wrap up in this game, guys? Any thoughts that you're kind of percolating around? Any performances you want to dig into? I mean, we didn't get the kind of vintage Brendan Aaronson that we've been seeing lately. I thought he was active, but just didn't quite have it in the final third. And you could say that for a lot of players on both teams for the first 60, 70 minutes of this match. It wasn't until Pulisic broke through that it sort of seemed like things changed.
Can I ask a question, mainly to Kaelin, but everyone can answer? There's that one play where the ball comes in right on the PK spot and Pepe has it with his back to goal. And he lays it back to Weah for the long shot. Mm-hmm. Do you like that or not like that moment from him?
I was like, oh, just turn and hit. Because I've seen him. He has that in his game where I think, you know, you just kind of roll it back or you just find that little bit of a gap and you just turn and hit it with your left, you know, or whichever foot you choose to, you know, sort of feel you sort of get in that soft spot and you feel that pocket. But I think like ultimately his layoff game was working throughout the match. Like I don't think Pepe had his best match. He had that one sort of fluff chance where the ball kind of came a little behind him, mm-hmm. but you'd expect him to set his feet a little bit better, and get on top of that one. Cause he kind of swung down on it. But yeah, I think, you know, his layoff game was working. His work rate was high. And you know, all those things were positive for me. It just, he just didn't quite, I think that was an opportunity where maybe, you know, because he could see Musa also had a guy sort of charging on him. I think it's technically the right play, but as a number nine, you don't always need to make the right play. You just turn
it also
and
was,
score the goal and nobody asks you questions.
It was a long layoff. It wasn't like he was right on top of the 18. Right. It was like 15 yards for him to run onto. So I thought it was weird, but yeah.
To be fair to Pepe too, obviously I'm rooting for 03, but I'm still a part of the Mexican-American Union. You guys will never know about that. That's just some weird news you wouldn't know about. But I feel like hopefully people aren't too critical on him because I feel like he didn't have the same kind of like clear-cut opportunities that you could say like a Tecatito had. Like a Chucky had in this game, and I hope that people go a little easy on him because I felt like never really truly had a clean hit in this game. Maybe there's a shot or two there that I missed right there, but I feel like, yeah, it was a little difficult there because he always had some sort of Gata or Johan Vasquez. They're like right in front of him in most of those opportunities.
I think his life was made harder because, and this is what I sort of touched on when I talked about Weah as man of the match, is Brendan Aaronson has been very good the last few games as mainly the creator. Like the ball has gone through him a ton. The ball went through Weah today. And Aaronson was not good as the second runner. He wasn't good as a second forward. And Anthony Robinson doesn't come and get involved off the from left back at all. And so I think Pepe's life was made harder because no one else was making runs. And if Pepe came for the pullback, everyone followed him because he was the only option in the box. And if Pepe went near post, it was the same conversation. Pulisic comes in and scores on his first touch because he makes an attacking goal-scoring run off that wing, reading Weah's movement. And I think that was one of the problems for Brendan Aaronson. And it's interesting. There's moments where you watch Aaronson on this team and you're like, we're not a Red Bull-style team. Like, there was a moment in the first half where the U.S. breaks lines and he chooses a super direct ball down the middle for Weah with three defenders around him. It's not a ball that works for this team, but it's the exact ball Jesse Marsh wants you to play so everyone can counter press and get high up the field and start running. And so there's those moments where there's a disconnect with the way he wants to play and with his role. And I thought today that was part of his struggle, was that consistently Weah was the creator and Musa likes to move to his right. And so in this game, Aaronson didn't get to play the role that he's at his best, and he's not the same player as Pulisic when he's off the ball.
What'd you think of Musa?
I love his game.
Pretty quiet on him for a guy that just is like effortlessly sort of palming people off him when he gets in possession. It's just a joy.
You know, there was the play where Pepe lays it off, and I think Taylor was like, you know, sort of celebrating Pepe to say, you know, for an 18-year-old, how well he was playing. I was like, I'm pretty sure Musa's 18 too, right? Yeah. and I don't think he was trying to throw any shade at all. That's just kind of how it's almost, you can almost forget by the way that Musa plays. He's just so composed on the ball. You know, even later on in the match, there was just the play where Zach Steffen just rolls the ball out in that sort of like
on the break.
That sort of drop play. And there's like two players crashing on either side of him, and he just decides to just let it roll through his legs and then continue and then go forward. And then he gets fouled and he doesn't get the call, right? But I kind of like that he got up. It was the one time I've seen him really sort of be demonstrative at the referee, because he's normally just he almost, you know, could very stray a little bit too close to the chill side of things. But man, like his ability, we talked a little bit about like a player, the comparison we've made before is maybe, I think, Darlington Nagbe, of just somebody who just always looks so comfortable on the ball.
Can he
hold on to the ball nearly as well as Darlington Nagbe?
But just he's got another, like a little bit more direct side to his game, I think. And I think partly because of where he plays with this club, but yeah, go ahead.
So from watching this game, he's a right-footed Marc-Anthony Kay. The way he chooses to take people on the half turn in awkward moments, because he's willing to take risks because he's ball secure in those moments, because it looked like what Marc-Anthony Kay did against Mexico at the Azteca a month ago. Like in a lot of moments with what Musa did, they like opposite sides of the field. Marc-Anthony Kay's a lefty and whatever. Sorry, it just popped in my head.
I hear that. I think Musa's a little more like with the ball, like when he's driving at a back line, I think he can really kind of go in that direction a little bit more even. Whereas I think Marc-Anthony Kay might actually defensively have a little bit more to his game too. But anyways, either way, I love the way that he plays, and you just feel that. That's why it was so confusing at times earlier when he wasn't involved in the Nations League, or when he wasn't involved with the national team. And you're like, well, what's going on here? And then you see when he's with Tyler, especially, who ultimately does change the entire picture of how both Weston can play and when he can charge forward and leave his space. And then also giving that extra little bit of security blanket behind Musa to do his thing. So, you know, I kind of went through and said how much I love those three together. But Musa, for sure, I think, you know, he's just even the scary part is he's almost just kind of scratching the ceiling of what he can do too. Cause I don't think we've seen fully that finished product of him scoring goals or getting on the end of things and really creating assists, even more secondary assists right now. But I think that's going to be an element we're going to see from him down the road.
Guys, he doesn't play here week after week for Valencia. He plays on the wing. Like this is how good he can be, deputizing as a center mid once a month for the U.S. national team after he flies across the world. Imagine what it'll be like when he's playing this position a week in and week out and learning where he wants the ball, where he wants to make his runs, how he can set the whole field up. Because I think right now he's setting up portions of the field. He's reading the game and deciding, if I take this touch, defender comes with me, I can lay it off to Yedlin coming in. I can lay it back to Adams and get that second ball. But I think as he gets older and gets more comfortable in the role, he's going to start setting up the whole field. And he's unbelievable. He probably could be man of the match in this one as well. In the pregame show, I made a comment of like, Yunus Musa is not ready to dominate a game for 90 minutes against Mexico. Yeah. And when they pulled him out, it was like the 82nd minute. And I was like, maybe he is. Maybe I was wrong about that. It may have been a little too quick.
How about Zach Steffen? Then we'll get to Canada. We'll wrap this thing up and save our energy for Tuesday, another big match night in CONCACAF. Is this the right decision by Greg Berhalter?
It seemed like it after that save in the first half, yeah. Right? Was it against Chucky? It was Chucky. He had that fantastic opportunity there, and you saw some of those dangerous counters. And I thought for sure when I was seeing that counter, I was like, all right, guaranteed like opportunity right here for Mexico to get a goal here. And as we see right there, even Edson Alvarez had an opportunity early on. I didn't think that Edson would have an opportunity on target here, but really test him here. I thought maybe that would be an opportunity for Mexico to go up 1-0, but well done to him because it was incredibly impressive. And I was also, I don't know the exact details about the difference between Steffen and Turner. I know that Turner has been a little bit more in form. I know that Steffen hasn't had nearly as many minutes, but it seemed like it was the right opportunity here to give him the chance here, and really stepped up.
Do we think he'll rotate back, or do we think this is it?
I don't know that this is it. I don't think it's that type of situation.
I'm just saying for the time being. I'm not saying forever, but I'm saying for the foreseeable time.
I guess my point would be, I think he starts against Jamaica. I don't think that guarantees him the start in the first game in January.
I don't think there should ever be a first or guaranteed. I do think he is preferred by Berhalter. I think Berhalter prefers him, and I think I understand that. I think there are some things where, because we're not seeing Zach as much, you forget the ability that he has to make those types of saves, and that he is, I think, an elite shot stopper. And then I always felt the biggest difference is the way Berhalter wants to play, which is with the ball at the goalkeeper's feet to be able to play out of pressure at times. You know, they got into trouble. I can think of one time where the U.S. got into trouble trying to build out of the back. But otherwise, Zach actually played long quite a bit, a little bit safe more than anything, which I think from the team perspective was something that was very clear after what had happened in the past early in matches, especially against Mexico, and just kind of being a little bit more pragmatic at times. But then also when there were opportunities, they did try to build. So I think he is preferred by Berhalter. And I think right now performances like this back up reasons why.
I also think the personnel matters a lot, and Walker Zimmerman and Miles Robinson just aren't really comfortable on the ball. And in a game like this, you could see it. Maybe if Chris Richards is your lockdown starter and John Anthony Brooks is in and out, maybe that changes things a little, right? Where you can trust them to play out of the back. Yeah. You can just have Turner play quickly when they split wide, and he's less needed in possession. But this game, it was multiple times where Zimmerman was in a cul-de-sac, and it was, okay, just hit a long ball down the line or play it back to Steffen. And Steffen had some really good moments. He broke lines on the ground one time under pressure straight up the middle of the field in a really good moment. He clipped one out to Anthony Robinson as well. He had one moment where I thought he'd go long, and he plays it into Miles Robinson's feet to set up the next play. Like, he's good at it, and that's why he's on the field. Maybe it's less important with other guys out there, but in this game with this group, it was massively important.
Yeah, there's never a moment, too, where I thought that Chucky, Jimenez, or Tecatito were really putting him in danger.
Yeah.
There was never a moment where I felt like, oh, like they're going to get him. They're going to get, if anything, it was the opposite. I thought like there was like Ochoa might be like making like a mistake here. I thought like maybe like more so than what Stefan was doing out there in his own half.
Dos a cero. That's the final score line. Just fun to say it. It's just the best phrase in United States soccer. I know, but when you got the opportunity, you just gotta keep repeating. That takes the U.S. to the top of the octagon on this night. That could all change, as Cesar reminded us on Tuesday.
On goal differential.
Well, you know, head to head as well. So we're gonna go down the tiebreakers. I don't have to go back through all this, and
we'll see what happens early next year. Could be short.
We will. Look, let's talk about what happened for Canada. Dave, I know you and I both had eyes on that game. Every time I looked down, the action in Alberta was getting a little bit testy. Let's say this was not a vintage performance for Canada, not one that they'll look back on and be like, wow, we really did all the things we wanted to do in this match. They got the 3 points. And that, for Canada, is just as big a step as anything else at this point of winning games, especially at home in this region, the position they're in, that they really didn't perform up to snuff in. Like, it was an ugly goal, but who cares? They are right there in that top three. And if you had to, be a betting man, you would say Canada are going to a World Cup, and that's pretty incredible.
They're a young team, and I think they're at their worst, unfortunately, right now, when it's their game to dictate and dominate. That all of their worst performances have been at home against teams they should beat, and I think you saw that again tonight. They were, in the first half, they had 65% possession. They outshot Costa Rica 4-3, and Costa Rica had the best chance. And then in the second half, they get the go-ahead goal. They could have had two or three more. Tejan Buchanan hits the crossbar in an unreal moment on a bike kick. But they left the game open the whole time. They never locked things down. They weren't knocking it around to see out the game, and they didn't score the second goal. And so this is a performance they needed, and that's sort of where we're at right now for Canada. Is getting to the World Cup is manna from heaven, right? It's the miracle that they want. It's the miracle they need. And I think if you really want to look down the road, they're actually probably better in that competition than they are here, because I think they're better sitting in a block and countering. And so just getting these results is what's necessary. And to get 45,000 in the building, it can go up to 50. And to not lose, so that you generate that interest going into this game against Mexico, is such a huge deal. And I think that's what Canada will look at and say, you know, it's job well done, it's mission accomplished, and then move forward.
Are you implying something like it's almost like a championship, like EPL thing? Just like the teams that are more well suited for counterattacking, kind of like defensive soccer, will be doing better in the EPL as opposed to a USA or Mexico, who might have a little bit more issues in the actual World Cup, who play a little bit more attack minded?
Could be. I mean, I think that it fits them better. Look, they tied at Azteca, they tied in the US. And they were the better team in both those games. They've trailed at home to Honduras, to Panama. They almost trailed tonight to Costa Rica. So it's like hard to put those two things together. But you watch this game and like Alphonso Davies pulls up from 35 yards out and rips a shot in a transition moment where he had options around him. And it's where you look at that and you say, well, Davies isn't the guy at Bayern. And so he's learning to be that player on this team. Jonathan David's been really quiet. While he is the guy at Lille, it's a different style. It requires something different from him. And so I think it's still a group that's learning each other and a lot of players that are learning that experience. But to learn while getting wins is a pretty ideal situation. And they came out on fire. Like, they came out the first 15 minutes and dominated. And Costa Rica, to their credit, and none of us will be shocked by this, They put Eustaquio into the front row, and 2 minutes later, they put Alphonso Davies on the ground, and the medics had to come out because he got hit in the face. That killed the momentum of that first half. And so Costa Rica understood how to manage the moment, manage the experience. They're a veteran team. That's what they've been. They've been in this for 10 to 11 years as a group. And then Canada had to kind of find their feet again, and that's sort of the experience they're going to be going through this whole cycle.
Cesar, how do you think Tata will approach this game? Because in some ways, as I hear Dave say that and think about the way Canada plays, Mexico losing this match and coming in and sort of Do we want to call it desperation? We can call it whatever it is. It's not desperation,
must
but it's
win.
urgency.
But also, Canada's not afraid. You know, they went down to Azteca and got a draw. So we talked about the U.S. not being afraid, but, you know, Canada's probably going to feel pretty good about their chances as well, too.
I think it's an excellent point, too, Caitlin, because I think that hopefully Mexico recognize what happened over the summer. Yes, you could say, oh yeah, the U.S. beat them twice, they beat them a third time now, like they're the true like competition here. But no, like you have to recognize that Canada held them at the Azteca 1-1 in the Gold Cup. Let's not forget how close that was. That extremely, let's call what it is. I'm not going to say it was a narrow one for Mexico. It was an extremely narrow win for them in the Gold Cup. So hopefully Mexico do give them enough respect here. Hopefully they do recognize that it is going to be a tough opportunity here. And like you said, I mean, just because Mexico are what Mexico are, especially after this loss, like, it seems like a win here has to be necessity for Tata. I think he's going to have no excuses. Personally, I think Mexico would have an okay international window if they still walked away with just one point. I would say that's the minimum that they need to walk away with. Now, I'm not saying it's going to be a total failure if they only walk away with one point, but if they don't get a win here, Tata is going to be under an immense amount of pressure. Immense might even be an understatement here, especially after the result to the U.S., which is, of course, a 2-0 loss. And it feels like, I don't know, that's a regression of sorts for what Mexico was trying to accomplish in the last year or so.
But, Caitlin, I think to your point, it fits for Canada. Like, if I'm Canada, I'm saying we've got them outdoors in Edmonton. We think we're going to have 50,000 in the building. Back in Alfonso Davies' hometown.
It's going to be 3 degrees or some.
It's going to be 0 degrees.
depending on the Celsius. If you're a Fahrenheit or Celsius person, it could be zero.
It's going to be cold nonetheless. Yeah.
And to be real, I think if Mexico had won against the U.S., not only could they play the game different, but I don't think you'd be sure what the lineup was, right? Yeah. Maybe Tata says, why don't I protect Ache? Why don't I protect Raul Jimenez? Whatever it is. Now you're kind of sure what you're going to see and how it's going to look. And I think for Canada, it fits well as a matchup for them going to this one. So they have to be excited about what can happen on Tuesday night.
Well, they got to be excited about what Tim Weah did tonight too, right? Thinking that you have Tejan on that side.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even on the other side, you're more dynamic than the U.S. on the other side with Alfonso Davies. Like, I would be pretty excited about those matchups if I was John Erdman.
The thing is, though, it's just like Herdman has to recognize that this isn't going to be the same defensive setup. It's not going to be Vasquez or Cata. Like, Araujo is going to be dropping back in. We'll see what Moreno is like. Moreno could potentially drop in as well, because it wasn't as if he was 100% guaranteed that he was out today. It was doubtful. So you could potentially have Araujo or Moreno, and that would significantly change things for Old Tree setup. But nonetheless, even if it's Moreno and Alcohol in that back line, and I talked about what happened earlier this year, Mexico can't underestimate what Canada can throw at them. Can't underestimate what David or Davies or Buchanan can throw at them, because they've made things difficult this year. And I hope that it's not going to be another away loss here. It's not going to be the end of the world here in World Cup qualification if they get another loss here, but it could make things a little bit more complicated in their path towards 2022.
Yeah, Canada is better than the U.S. on the wings. They have better wing play.
Yeah.
And so if you can get those defenders isolated, that's an issue. The more worrying part for El Tri, from my perspective, is just the lack of goals. And for so long, it seemed like it was like, oh, once we get Raul Jimenez back, we're going to, you know, things will begin clicking. And is it going to be Funes Mori? He can't get the goals. Like, he just seemed snake bit. He wasn't able to do it. And Tata kept believing in him. And, you know, that you've got the wingers going, and is their form abroad? Now they're in good form. Can they come back? And still, it just doesn't seem to be clicking. And so the lack of offensive kind of, you know, the toothlessness of that attack for me has been, you know, I think Canada can go that way. I would be more worried, can Canada hold Mexico? But the way Mexico's playing right now, you sort of have to question where the goal is going to come from.
Yeah, no, they definitely need to capitalize on those opportunities. I feel like they need to be more efficient. I don't know if that's the right word to use in the final third. We saw that with Tecatito. We saw that with, to an extent, Chucky. Not so much Raul Jimenez, because I feel like he does so much work stepping back, creating opportunities, like dishing balls out there. But yeah, no, I 100% agree, because when you have this final three, it seemed like, okay, cool. Mexico going to get the job done. They have Tecatito, they have Chucky, they have Jimenez. It should be fine. And it seemed the assumption was that they were not only going to win, but score several goals against CONCACAF opponents. And that hasn't been the case so far. So that is an excellent point. And I mean, I expect that to go with the same front three in this game. And if it doesn't work, then you're going to have some serious questions about the setup.
It's interesting because we've talked a lot about these three-game windows. This is the 1-2 game window in CONCACAF. Yeah. And it felt, I thought, that for the coaches, play your best team, and there's a pretty good chance you could play your best team again. John Herdman went with a 4-4-2. He started Sam Adekube, who's been phenomenal for this national team over the last year and a half. He's played a vital role in when they've been good and moving players around, but you'd assume Canada goes back to five in the back. You'd assume Alistair Johnston comes back into this team as well. Kyle Larin probably as well, as it was Liam Miller today. But Larin's still coming back from that injury. But that doesn't mean that John Herdman has to do that. And to Kalen's point and Cesar's point about the danger, it was Jorge Sanchez who scored the goal against Canada at the Azteca, and Tecatito didn't, and Chucky didn't, and Raul, like, It was a fullback, so there is
a
chance.
I'm not putting a lot of faith in Jorge Sanchez in this game.
Yeah,
but yeah.
For sure. He's probably not going to play. So yeah. So you're looking at a team for Canada where, yeah, you could, if you want to, try and go four at the back again and have more options higher up the field. It feels risky to me, but you never know. And what Canada has built, and I said this, I think, on our show previewing this, is the best roster that Canada has ever brought into a World Cup qualifier.
I think that's something that just, like, especially like Mexican soccer media sometimes doesn't get. You look at this roster and sometimes like they forget like who is within this team. But like from what I've seen, just like Eustaquio, David, Davies, Buchanan, Mark Anthony Kay. It's just like, this is a pretty decent team. Like you can even look beyond that too. Just like it's a decent roster that they have set up here.
Yeah. And that's the top end, and that's the best that's ever been. But what's amazing is that it goes all the way through, and that Canada has been a team that has called in players consistently over the last 20 years who are not with clubs or are not playing first division or first team soccer, like team players that are playing on reserve teams and second teams and whatnot. And that's like not even close to being the case, to the fact where I can say there are lineup questions at every line for Canada going into the next game. Kyle Larin didn't start today. Jonathan Osorio didn't start today. Alistair Johnson doesn't start today. Daniil Henry, like Maxime Crépeau, as Milan Borjan got hurt at some point in this game, it felt like he'd come on. You literally have a debate at every line, and that's because the team is so deep, which is awesome to see.
Right back depth for Mexico, question marks here. Matt Doyle hit us up. Does Cesar think Tata should call in June Araujo as emergency call up ahead of the Canada game? Really, I mean, cutting edge question for you there. So,
I mean,
is that Matt from East Meadow calling in?
I don't.
No, I think you do give Jorge Sanchez an opportunity here. I think if you want to push more for a win here, you got to give an opportunity Jorge Sanchez, who I would say is more pacey than a Shaka Rodriguez. I mean,
does he eye gouge as well? How's his eye gouge?
His eye gouge. I haven't seen those. I haven't seen those ratings on Y Scout or any point recently.
Like the little heat map graphics, yeah, like very. Yeah, not really, not bringing it with the gouge.
I'll have to look that up on Y Scout. But no, he does. I think he brings a little bit more verticality. I guess verticality is probably the word to use here. So I would probably bring him in. But I mean, to be fair to Matt, yeah. There is an issue here, not only just a right back, but also a left back for Mexico when it comes to their fullback situation. You look at the front line, kind of makes sense. Chucky Jimenez, Tecatito, they do have some backups. I'm pretty confident about some of those backups. Midfield, it's all right here, but I think the true weak link is definitely in the back line. And it kind of makes sense for Julian Araujo to kind of step up here, because I think he could easily, and I don't use that lightly, I think he could easily become a backup, perhaps even a starter, in a very, very, very quick amount of time here for the national team for Mexico, because they really need someone like him to not only to add to the depth, but to get some minutes in the near future. And Mexico does have a friendly December, and I'm hoping that he gets an opportunity there. And if the rumors are true, you might even see David Ochoa getting some opportunities there for Ulti in December. But yes, we'll see. If
he didn't even get a call up to the Revelations Cup. The Revelations Cup is where everything's happening.
Man, that's, if you don't get called up to Revelations, it's the end of the world. That's
Marcelo Flores is killing it out there, and that's all.
Boom, there's the future. Yeah.
Canada hosting Mexico in Edmonton on Tuesday, 9:05 p.m. Eastern, Paramount
Plus. Will you be there?
Is your home for that one?
I looked at it a couple times. It's really, you got to fly to a lot of places.
A lot of direct flights.
What are the Airbnbs looking like in Edmonton these days?
You can't fly direct to Edmonton? Is that like
it came through Calgary and then through the air? You know, I don't even know.
Yeah, but lots of Toronto connections. It was a little pricey.
Okay,
but I got my eye on where Canada's picking for the January window, which is going to be Canada hosting the U.S. I think in the second game of that window. You'd assume Vancouver, because
if that's
I don't know
in
that
Vancouver,
you can play outside.
I might have to go for that.
Woo, yeah. Alec, you want to split an Airbnb? Let's do it.
I've got a buddy there. We're taken care of. We're good.
Is it Jay Demerit? Are we staying with Jay Demerit?
Jay's probably got he let me stay at his campsite last time. Some kids up there, so it might be a little cold that time of year up there. But we'll see.
I don't know that either of you two can keep up with Jay Demerit.
I don't think so. I'm still recovering.
I think he'd run you into the ground. U.S. back in action on Tuesday, top of the Octagon, 5 p.m. Eastern, so an early game in Jamaica. Some big news for the U.S. for that one. We have, we're very excited, Dos Acero, but there are two missing for that game that were starters here. Miles Robinson, of course, got the red card. He's going to be out. You'd think Chris Richards would be the obvious replacement for him next to Walker Zimmerman. And then Weston McKennie, also suspended, got a yellow card for arguing in the sort of melee around the Chaka eye gouge.
That's not one the where Tyler, you not would the Tyler normally, Adams one. You would normally say don't get a yellow from that, but U.S. Mexico, and like you need Weston in there still. So I was like, at first I was like,
If Kellen's on the field, you can say Weston back away. But Kellen was not on the field.
Tapped him in, he should have just tapped.
Yeah, just get that sub quickly. And by the way, if Kellen is the one who scores that goal and has the T-shirt, he probably shows it directly to Memo. I don't think he runs to the corner. I think he stops in front of him and just pulls it up for him. What a moment that would have been. What do you think this game is, Kaylin, for the U.S. in Jamaica? Would a point be enough? Do they have to get three? I mean, at this point, when you see sort of the table start to break up, and you have a leader group, basically, mm-hmm. It doesn't necessarily feel like winning on the road is it's all that. Be nice, but it's not everything.
Yeah, I think a point on the road would be fine. I think, especially when you consider, I mean, I think the group will be buzzing from this last match. And then, the other thing is that this is a two-match window versus before, which I think allows you to save for Christian. And then, you know, the guys that are going to be missing anyways, you can kind of push. There's no reason, the way we saw the kind of the rotaciones, to borrow a term, is in the past. Well, I played for Juan Carlos Osorio, so I know a little bit about that. we won't have to see a massively shifted lineup for Tuesday. I think you'll still see the main core returning from the last match. I think probably Kellen slides in. I guess you could potentially play Busio as well.
Greg said he's pushing for a starting spot coming into the camp.
Okay.
Which,
but it's more going to be, I think we'll see maybe two or three changes max, which to me is always the most you really, if you can afford to not make more changes than that, especially when the team is playing well and, you're getting results. So I wouldn't be surprised to see this team go down to Jamaica and come away with 3 points. But I think 1 point should be the expectation.
Yeah, I would agree. And I think 4 points from the window is big. I think beating Mexico was the job for this window, both from a getting to the World Cup point of view, and I still talk about perception. Like, this team's still winning back fans that it lost. It's still appealing to the general public. Similar how we've talked about it with Canada as well. So that this was the moment. Friday night, national TV. Like,
I had buddies texting me, knows. Who are these guys? they're not soccer guys.
Obviously. Exactly. I had a friend text and I had multiple people text me, and then they were all like, the US is a second half team. And I was like, oh, thanks for telling. Like, that felt good to hear from other people. I'm not saying it to them.
I want to see what my friends texted.
So going to Jamaica. We've talked about it a little. Mikel Antonio played. Leon Bailey hasn't played in World Cup qualifying yet. He started today. So this is a much improved Jamaica team from when the U.S. played them at home. The big piece that came in is Anthony Grant, who plays in the championship as well at defensive midfield. And then obviously this is a Javon Watson show. But if you can afford to assist him in midfield with someone who can actually cover ground and break up play, that's huge for Jamaica. They weren't able to do that against the U.S. in Austin. So Grant coming back into this team is huge for them. And then you have those attacking pieces up top, which means that Jamaica doesn't have to commit as many numbers to the attack to create chances. And Shamar Nicholson kind of does it by himself as well. So I just saw the Mikel Antonio goal. I mean, he takes it from midfield and just eats a defender alive and then finishes.
Little dink chip finish is beautiful. But by the way, Alex Rodon's header, top corner,
was also very nice.
Was a really nice goal as well. And if you haven't seen those highlights between Panama and Honduras, go check that out, because Panama came roaring back. That could be the sort of game, the sort of result that they have to have if this big dream for them is going to happen, whether that be a playoff or depending on how it all goes down. As I said, they got a couple games in between facing Mexico, Canada, and the U.S. before it really heats up for them at the end. Perhaps even somehow maybe pushing their way in. We've seen crazier things in this region happen in the last cycle. So, I think that's going to be it for us tonight. I'll leave us on this. This is Christian Pulisic. Quote, I'm not trying to cause any controversy with the T-shirt. It was just an idea that came into my head. Jokingly, quote, I wrote it in the mirror. So that's it for tonight. Some poetry for U.S. fans in Cincinnati. We hope this is not the end.
Shout out to
feelings.
Cincinnati, by the way. Yeah. Epic atmosphere, first ever World Cup qualifier. They didn't have a pro soccer team 5 years ago, and now it's like the spot to be. Everyone I know that was there was super pumped about it. So shout out to Cincy. I don't know if you know about Cincy, but you can get to the game via March, and that's exciting.
Yeah, it is a big March town. If I've ever been in a big March town, Cincinnati takes the cake. All right, that's it for us. We will be back on Monday with the Kindle Tire Awards, wrapping up the regular season in Major League Soccer and getting ready for the playoffs, then back live on Tuesday ahead of U.S. Jamaica on Twitter Spaces, and after that game for all the reaction, and then back on Thursday to preview the Audi 2021 MLS Cup playoffs. Those are coming thick and fast. November 20th, the first games, full coverage, MLSsoccer.com and the MLS app. If you don't subscribe, if you haven't rated us, please do so. If you've been watching along live and just absolutely crushing us in the YouTube comments section, I salute you. For my partners in soccer, I'm Andrew. We're out of here. We'll see you on Monday, everybody.